everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us for Midday. The Baltimore Running Festival launches on Saturday morning at the Inner Harbor. More than 25,000 runners will hit the streets of Charm City. Some will run the full marathon or take part in a relay team. Many will attempt to conquer the 13.1-mile half marathon, and others will dash through the 5K. The oldest is a 90-year-old man running the half marathon, and the youngest will include children whose fun run will finish at the same finish line in Camden Yards as the marathoners. My guest today is Dr. Miho Tanaka, a former Division I college athlete, an orthopedic surgeon, and the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. We'll talk about running and health and fitness and what you can do to develop an exercise regimen that's right for you. Midday gets underway right after the news. And welcome to Midday on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. The Baltimore Marathon is one of nearly 1,200 certified marathons in the United States. And if you've ever run one, chances are you have heard Bruce Springsteen's classic At the Start Line. On Saturday, runners from all 50 states and 24 countries around the world will converge on Charm City to run through some of our most historic neighborhoods and beautiful parks. About 4,000 runners will attempt the Olympian feat of staying in motion for 26.2 miles. Roughly 12,000 brave souls will jog through the 13.1-mile half marathon, and about 5,000 will run the 5K race earlier in the day. Another few thousand will run distances of 6 to 7 miles on relay teams. That's a lot of collective steps, a lot of potential blisters, backaches, and wobbly knees. My guest today knows a lot about the physical challenges that are faced by professional athletes and weekend warriors alike. Dr. Miho Tanaka is an orthopedic surgeon and the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. Before moving to Baltimore, she was the team physician for the St. Louis Cardinals and the St. Louis Surge in the WNBA. She has also served as assistant team physician for the Baltimore Orioles and another professional women's basketball team, the New York Liberty. She is a former collegiate athlete herself. She was on the Stanford University track team, and she has treated student athletes from high school to college. Miho Tanaka, welcome to Midday. It's good to see you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me here.
So when it comes to avoiding injuries that, you know, sort of almost inevitably occur when you're doing something like distance running or anything, you know, soccer or basketball or whatever the sport is that you want, are there general rules for staying pain-free and injury-free when you're doing this kind of exercise?
Yeah, I think especially in the repetitive type sports, it's really important to maintain a lot of your health. So any sort of imbalance can really lead to an overload of one area, especially when you're doing things like running, you know, 20, 26 miles. So stretching and maintaining symmetry, keeping a good muscular balance, so keeping, you know, your hamstrings and your quadriceps, everything sort of balanced is important. And I also think that the way you train, so getting back into a program if you haven't been running for a while or training for a marathon and not suddenly running 26 miles out of the blue, those are kind of the important concepts. And of course, finally, not pushing through pain, you know, because I think most runners are type A and they really can get through anything. But I think being smart about the way you work out is really important and keeping healthy.
Yeah, pushing through pain, that's a common thing. I mean, you know, I'm a runner, not a marathoner. I'm a half marathoner, although I haven't done one in a couple of years. And it's easy to say, well, it doesn't hurt that much. Yeah. But the problem is your body's telling you something when your joints start hurting, your knees start hurting, your back start hurts.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And I think that what people don't always think about is, you know, they think about the workout and getting that in, but the recovery process is so essential afterwards. And it takes us about 48 hours to fully recover from a workout. So, you know, you probably know after a run, you feel sore the next day. And sometimes you feel even more sore the second day afterwards.
That's an interesting phenomenon, isn't it? We call it the day after the day after.
Yes.
So, I mean, there will be plenty of people who are hurting on Sunday after they finish the 5K, the half, or the full marathon. But then they could find that Monday they feel actually worse.
Right.
Why is that?
It has to do with the lactic acid that you produce in your body. So, you know, when you are using your muscles, they need oxygen. And when you don't have oxygen, your body creates lactic acid, essentially, as a byproduct. And you have to be able to clear that from your system. And the longer that stays there, the more, you know, pain you tend to have gradually over time. As we get older, our ability to clear that becomes even slower, which is why you're more likely to be sore 2 days out as opposed to the next day out the older that you are. And it's really important to pay attention to that and to anticipate that as well, because you may feel fine the day after your run and think, okay, well, today I ran 5 miles, tomorrow I'm going to run 10. But that's where you're really doing some harm and, you know, potentially getting injury.
Yeah, so if you are doing something like running mm-hmm. every single day, that's a whole different can of worms than running, say, 3 times a week with days off in between to recover.
Yeah.
And the same could be said for weightlifting or, you know,
for anything.
Yoga even. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, does that apply to sort of everything across the board?
I would say in general, especially when you're talking about repetitive sports, you know, this is why we really encourage kids, for example, to not be a single sport athlete and to play, you know, club baseball and pitch throughout the year. I think that in general, you want to have balance in your muscles. Maybe things like yoga are not so extreme and not so strenuous on the joints. And so something like that you could do every day. But especially running and impact type activities, I think that's really important to kind of spread it out and get different types of training in.
You talk about symmetry. Mm-hmm. This is something that a lot of folks forget about. And this is particularly germane to runners,
yes.
but it also applies to other sports and activity as
yeah.
well. If you're leaning a little bit to the right or mm-hmm. leaning a little bit to the left, you're going to be stressing certain muscles more than others. And that could cause problems.
Right. That's exactly right. It can be in two ways. One is in a sudden way. So if you're doing a quick jump stop and one side is, you know, stiffer or weaker than the other, then you're more likely to buckle and lose your balance and lose your center of gravity. And you're more likely to have a knee or an ankle injury from that. But it can also be cumulative over time. So especially if you're a runner, you know, a lot of times people will look at the soles of their shoes and say, oh, I'm pronating more on my right than on the left. And if you think about the tens of thousands of steps that you take over the course of, you know, your run or your running career, and you think about how much more load, you know, even if it's just 5% or 10% more you're putting on one side, you can see how you would build up stress on that side as well, leading to overuse.
And when it comes to running, serious runners know how important the shoes are. What's your opinion about those things that aren't shoes
yeah.
with the toes? They're like rubbery things.
Right.
I have a lot of friends who swear by them and
yeah.
stuff. I remember Bill Howard,
yeah.
he's passed away, a lovely guy who was at the Union Memorial mm-hmm. Sports Medicine Clinic, said that he wished he had his business card attached to every pair of those things that they sold because people were absolutely, without question, going to get injured and need his services. I mean, do you hold that view of these things as well? People swear by it.
Yeah, some people do swear by them. You know, I think that it's running is everybody has different needs for their shoes and for their feet. And one of the physical therapists that I know and work with, I think, said it best when he said, you know, in the 80s, the only people who ran were serious runners, you know, people who are built to run. But now running is a fad and everybody does it, even though you might not really have a runner's body. And so I think the shoe thing applies to that too. Some people, if you're built to run and you have this naturally great stride and you want to be kind of unencumbered while you're running and you don't need the extra support, then I think that's fine. But there are other people who do tend to pronate or who have really high arches and who actually need that extra support. So it's not really a one size fits all, but it's really what is keeping your alignment the best. And so a lot of times you have to have a second set of eyes who are going to look at your shoes and kind of watch your stride and also try out a couple of pairs to really find what works best for you. So.
And the better running stores mm-hmm. will actually put you on a treadmill mm-hmm. and have you run and observe your running and say, okay, you're a pronator to the left or to the right or something. So then they can recommend a particular brand.
Yeah.
So, you know, it may be Asics for one person and Nike and Under Armour for another. I mean, you just don't know. But people do have to look at you. You can't figure this out yourself.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I mean, you can look at the wear on your shoes to see what. But most of the time, you need somebody who is an objective person who's watching you from the front and from the back and from the side as you're running, which is hard to do. Even on a treadmill with a mirror right in front of you, you can't really see what's happening with your feet. You don't always need the fancy gadgets. You know, they do help. They can measure the angles and really put things into slow motion and things like that. But anyone who with an eye for running and really understands gait can would be able to help you with that without a treadmill and without the machines.
When it comes to stretching, mm-hmm. there seems to be a long-standing argument about whether or not it's important to stretch before you do exercise or after.
Yeah.
Because there's the camp that says if you don't stretch before, you're going to open yourself up to the possibility of injury while you're exercising. And others to say you got to wait until you're warmed up.
Yeah.
And if you're stretching cold, you could hurt yourself before you even get started.
Yeah.
So I have no idea. where do you weigh in on this?
I think, you know, it's interesting because I kind of grew up and I was training right around that time when that mental thought process was shifting. So when I was, you know, I started out as a runner when I was like 9. And back then I had coaches that made a stretch and then run. And then by the time I was like getting into college, we were warming up first and then stretching. And so, you know, you're right. There's lots of different camps. In general, it's important to stretch. And so I think better to stretch than not. And the types of people who are out there injuring themselves just by stretching, I mean, I think there are rare, you know, fraction of the group of runners that are out there. In general, we say that having a little bit of blood flow, like you said, helps with the stretching process. And the more you are doing, whether it's more distance or the more intense the workouts are or the higher intensity, so if you're doing things like box jumps and things like that, those are where you do what we call eccentric activity. So the muscle is actually lengthening as you're firing it, which is what allows for these really forceful movements. And that's where stretching is especially important because you need that pliability and that elasticity of the muscles in order to have that sort of spring back, so to speak.
These box jumps are interesting. I see these people doing these at the gym all the time. I am not one of the people
Good.
Who attempts them. But that's from a standing start
yes.
and you jump up on a box
yeah.
and then you jump back down and you do it again. And some people have boxes that are really high and it's quite impressive to do it. What does that kind of activity do?
I mean, what
does that help you with? And
yeah.
you can imagine how people could easily get hurt doing
right
it.
Absolutely. Those things are I think pretty dangerous for the most part, but again, going back to the whole eccentric load and the explosive type movements, you know, we have this the two types of muscle fibers. One are the endurance type muscle fibers, and then the other are the explosive type muscle fibers. And you can tell the difference between a sprinter and a long distance runner just by looking at them. But these sorts of box jumps and the plyometrics and the explosive type movements help us to build up our fast twitch muscle fibers, which in a lot of times for most people are better defined muscles, more bulk, right? And so from a workout perspective, it's more bang for your buck, so to speak, because it really gives you that sort of look that a lot of people are going for. So I think that's why people like it. But it's not something that you should just jump into right away. And I would say that plyometrics and those types of exercises, as well as CrossFit and P90X and Infinity, all of those rely on kind of plyometric type exercises. That's where I see the most number of overuse type injuries because people will just kind of dive right into them. And it's a little bit too much too soon.
Yeah. In the patients that you see at the women's sports program, the other patients that you see, men and women both, I mean, when you're generally speaking designing an exercise regimen for somebody, obviously you take his or her gender, age, and level of fitness into consideration. But what are the general criteria that you use to determine, you know, you should, you know, running would be good for you, maybe not so good for this other person, you know, maybe you should do, you know, stationary bike instead of, field hockey or something. How do you decide that for people?
Yeah, I think it has to do with their current level of activities. And then usually when people come see me, they have a problem. So they're not coming to see me for an exercise program. And so, you know, if they have any sort of problem that involves their lower extremity, I usually don't recommend running initially. But most of the people are runners who won't ever stop running. And so I have to kind of, you know, bench them for a little bit and try to figure out a way for them to get back into it. In terms of people who are kind of more open to whatever types of workouts, I would say if whatever you're doing at that point, so if you are just, you know, walking for exercise and not doing too much more than that, then you need to go in a stepwise progression. So you would go, you know, start with the bike and then with the elliptical and then to running. So it's progressing not just the volume of the exercises, but the intensity and especially the impact, because that's where, again, it's the loading where people tend to feel that the most.
Right.
Now, if you're you're already a runner and you're, you know, playing sports at a high level, then, you know, going from lacrosse to football or to baseball, that's really not a problem. But it's really the intensity that we look at.
Dr. Miho Tanaka is the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. We'd love to hear from some folks who are running their very first full or half marathon at the Baltimore Running Festival this weekend, or anybody else who has questions about health and fitness. You can give us a call and talk to Dr. Tanaka. You can reach us 410-662-8780. That's 410-662-8780 on the phone, midday at WIPR.org on email, and our Twitter handle at midday Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Midday with Tom Hall here on your NPR news station, WYPR.
That's right. We're doing some slow-mo running here in Studio A. Welcome back to Midday on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the broadcast, Jeffrey Kahn will join me. He's the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics, and we'll talk about some of the big issues that we face in an increasingly complicated bioethical world. We'll also check in with theater critic J. Wynn Russick for her weekly theater review. The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime is at the Kennedy Center, and we'll see what Judy has to say about that. Hope you can join us tomorrow for Midday. Today, we're talking about running and health and fitness as about 25,000 movers and shakers get ready to rock and roll on Saturday at the 16th Annual Baltimore Running Festival. Dr. Miho Tanaka is here. She's the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. She's treated everyone from professional baseball and basketball players to weekend warriors, just like many of the folks who are running on Saturday. So whether you're running or not this weekend, if you've got a question for Dr. Tanaka, you can give us a call, 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, or send me a tweet at midday Tom Hall. So our director, Dr. Tanaka, Luke Spicknall, who is a brilliant person in many ways, he, and I have to give them full credit for this, he and Aaron Henkin, who's the co-host of Out of the Box, came up months ago with an excellent idea for a new show here on WYPR. Okay. And I'm going to audition as the host, because this is a show I really want to host. And the show is called What Hurts Today? You see, and this is an excellent show. I think I guess it's between me and Wink Martindale, who are the two people they're considering as a host. But and so perhaps if we get some calls today, the midday today will turn into What Hurts Today. You know, call for Dr. Tanaka. Oh, my elbow hurts, my shoulder hurts, and that's fine. Call and tell us about it. But it sounds like we may devolve into that. Let's actually go to the phones. We've got a call from Baltimore. Tisha is on the line. Tisha, welcome to Midday with Dr. Miho Tanaka.
How did I know you were segueing into my call? That's so funny.
Lucky guess.
Exactly. This is a great opportunity. Again, I was mentioning to your call screener that I am a fitness professional. I've been teaching group fitness for about 15 years now. I'm also a personal trainer and a social worker. I was diagnosed about 4 years ago with a condition called Charcot, and I have not been able to run since then. And I'm wondering, I know you cannot give me medical advice. I am under a physician's care. Also, I see an orthopedic surgeon on a regular basis. But I am wondering what you would think about someone with this condition ever being able to jog or run again. Maybe not long distance, excuse me, but, you know, maybe intervals or circuits of walking and jogging, just to get your perspective.
All right, so Dr. Tanaka, the condition is Charcot. What is that?
Sure. So actually, there's two types of Charcot. One is Charcot of the foot, and the other one is a genetic condition called Charcot-Marie-Tooth. Could you specify which one?
I have Charcot foot.
Charcot foot. Okay. Are you diabetic? Usually the two go hand in hand.
I was diabetic. I had been diabetic since my very early years, and I had received a pancreas transplant. So
I
do have some of the some of the complications of diabetes.
I see. So Charcot foot is actually where the bones in your foot become softer, essentially, and you're not able to withstand load. And so I'm assuming that you had to spend some time in a walking cast or a boot, and you have to be really careful about what comes into contact with your foot, I'm assuming. That is a pretty serious condition when it comes to feet, not just for runners, but for anybody. You know, really, I'm not a foot and ankle specialist, but I do know that the important thing in Charcot is to maintain as much of your normal foot architecture as you can. And in that setting, running on that is putting a lot of undue stress on the foot. I think, you know, obviously, people who like to run don't like to hear this, but switching to things that are non or low impact, so elliptical or biking or even swimming would probably be, you know, your best option for exercise. But yeah, Charcot foot is not really a condition where, of course, anyone can run if they wanted to try to work up to that. But I think in terms of investing in the health of your foot, it might not be the healthiest thing to do. Yeah.
Well, Tisha, thanks for your call and good luck. I mean, that is it's a sad thing for folks who like to do a particular exercise and they just can't anymore. But sometimes you just got to be realistic. Mark from Baltimore is on the line. Mark, welcome to What Hurts Today? I mean, I'm sorry, Midday. Welcome to Midday, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
A few months ago, had started training for a half marathon with my partner, and I started experiencing this problem. I think it was related to my IT band, but essentially what it was is when I would run at about the 5 mile mark is when it started. I would just have this extraordinary pain on the outside of my left knee. But then when I would slow down or stop and walk, it would be fine. I would experience no pain walking. And I do believe it's an IT band issue. And I was just wondering, are there any suggestions for new runners because before I had been a cyclist and a hiker and a walker, but never a strong runner. So maybe I started too much too fast. But it's been a consistent problem when I've tried to get back into running. So I was wondering, are there any suggestions for strengthening IT band or stretches?
Thanks, Mark. So here's a guy, you know, appreciate the call, Mark. Here's a guy, you know, who's fit. Obviously, he's hiking and doing these other things, cycling. But running in particular causes a problem with that IT band, which is the thing that runs down the side of your leg.
Exactly.
But it's clearly connected to the knee. Yeah. So what's your advice for Mark?
Yeah, I would say that IT band syndromes are probably the most common thing that I see in runners. And it has to do with the tightening of the band that runs down the side of your thigh and attaches just past your knee. It usually gets tight because you're overworking your muscles and then your muscles kind of tighten up. And then it's a difficult part that's, you know, difficult to stretch because it doesn't really cross a joint in the traditional way. The reason why you get the sort of pain over the outside of your knee is that as that band gets tighter, you have a bony prominence over the side of your knee and it will snap over that. And then you can get some inflammation with repetitive motion of that. There are some great stretches. You can do some hip stretches, and I'm sure that in the culture of running, you've probably seen the foam rollers, which you can buy. They kind of look like the pool noodles, and you can roll over those, and that really puts a lot of pressure on the band and forces it to get kind of stretched out. You can also get some massage treatments or just work on stretching that part of your hip. Additionally, strengthening your hip muscles, which are what attach to the IT band, can raise your threshold for having the sort of tightness by increasing your conditioning.
Yeah, and Mark, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I'm a big believer in the foam roller because I had a very similar problem. But I will tell you, for anybody who hasn't done the foam roller, the first week is painful.
Yeah.
It really hurts. I mean, but you have to force yourself to do it, work through it. But then after you get past a week or so of doing it a few times a week, it's going to feel better, and it really will help the IT band. I mean, the interconnectivity of the body is always just such an amazing and wonderful thing. I had lower back problems for the longest time until a physician of mine said, you need to stretch your hamstring. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was thinking my back was the problem. He said, nope, it's your hamstring. When it comes to stretching, his recommendation was that a lot of times people make the mistake of not stretching long enough. Mm-hmm. He suggested that for the hamstring stretches, and there are three of them that I do, that I hold each side for 2 minutes. So I actually put a timer. I put my watch on, and I hold it for 2 minutes. He said, you know, most people do it for 20 seconds, 40 seconds, and that's just not enough. Do you have a notion of something you recommend in terms of the length of stretch, how long people should hold stretches to get the most benefit?
Yeah, I don't have a hard number for that. 2 minutes is actually a little bit longer than I've heard, but I think the whole concept is to really get yourself into that stretch. So not just hold a position for 10 seconds or 20 seconds, but really let yourself relax into that. I generally say hold it for about 10 to 20 seconds and then relax, and then to try to go back into that stretch, but get a little bit more out of it each time and repeat it 3 times. That's my general.
So increase the intensity of it for a little bit. Yeah. Interesting. We have another call from Pat in Baltimore. Pat, welcome to Midday with Dr. Miho Tanaka.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Basically, I know some people, and my wife is one of them, who have run the 777, which is 7 marathons on 7 continents in 7 days. And I'm wondering, how bad can that and what kind of preparations do you need to take, and you know, what can the outcome be afterwards for pain?
Well, of course, a lot of non-runners will, this is what's happening in our control room now. Both, you know, our director and our producer are in there, and they're shaking their hands saying, this person needs a psychiatrist, not an orthopedic surgeon. But getting past the issue of whether or not that's a crazy thing to attempt, you know, when you do that kind of intense damage to your body. I mean, there's just no way of doing that without damaging something. What would you suggest?
Yeah, I think that, you know, in addition to the running aspect of it, the recovery aspect is so critical, and especially if you're traveling between continents to do these sorts of runs.
Jet lag on time, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Being able to replenish from a hydration perspective and a nutrition perspective are so, so critical. And that ability to bounce back from a run and get up and do another one, I think are going to be more important than the actual running aspect itself. After you run, you know, it's not just about, you know, catching your breath, but stretching afterwards, cooling down as well are important for that recovery so that you can get up and go again for your next race. So I would say that, you know, in terms of what damage are you actually doing, I think that the people who can do things like that are people who are naturally, you know, inclined and have a little bit more of a, you know, biological advantage somehow or another to be able to do that. But really being careful about that whole process of cooling down, recovering, and what you put into your body for replenishment are really vital.
You know, I've run about a dozen half marathons, and people say, how long does it take you to run them? And I usually say 8 hours. It takes me 2 hours to run them and 6 hours to sleep. So I book the whole day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't just book the morning, you know.
That's smart. That's, you know, really smart. Because,
I mean, you do have to recover from these
Absolutely.
Things. And we're talking a lot about the pain and the injury that one can get from running or other strenuous exercise, but we should talk about the benefits of running. I mean, running in particular, obviously with 1,200 marathons across the country, there are a lot of people who are very much into it. I mean, people like Oprah Winfrey has run a marathon. I mean, she's the one who inspired my wife, whom I'm very proud of. Lynell Smith has run 27 marathons.
Wow.
She's running number 28 actually in Detroit this weekend. And then she has run the Boston Marathon 9 times. And forgive me for taking a little time to brag about her. And she intends to run a 10th Boston Marathon sometime in the future. It's a sport, and we do it when we run together. We run in a group. We have a wonderful group called the Pacemakers, and it's people from, you know, very young to very old and everything in between. I mean, there are the social aspect of our running lives has been a really important dimension of.
Yeah, sure. I think that's fantastic. And I think, right, there's the social element. I think there's obviously the known health benefits in terms of cardiac health. And I think I saw a recent study talking about the emotional, you know, psychosocial benefits as well of the releasing of the endorphins and needing that to kind of feel better overall.
Yeah, people talk about runner's high.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's always interesting, you know, and of course I always say, that my wife is such a great runner because I give her so much to run from. And then that usually is, it's, I'm terrific motivation when it comes to running. All right. John is on the line from Washington, D.C. John, welcome to Midday with Dr. Miho Tanaka.
Thank you for taking my call. What I wanted to ask is that I've run marathons in the past, but I'm an older guy and I just simply don't have the time to do all the preparation that's necessary because, you know, on the weekends you have to do those long runs, and it just takes me too long to recover from those. But I do run half marathons and 10-milers, and I also work out with a trainer once a week who does really good stretching, but I have trouble keeping up with that stretching the rest of the time of the week. And I just want to get your view on, you know, what's the best way to schedule a training schedule. I usually try to run 2 to 3 times a week and then do other type of activities like plyometrics on at least 2 days a week. And just wondering what your thoughts are on that issue.
Well, thanks for your call, John. That sounds pretty balanced. I mean, he's not running every day, so he's getting a little time to recover in between runs, and doing other stuff is important.
Right. I agree. I think one of the early things that you mentioned was you said you're a little bit of an older guy, and I think that really highlights one of the issues that athletes face in terms of their training regimen. So in addition to not having enough time to recover or work workouts into your regular life, but as we get older, we actually have to work a little bit harder to maintain the level of activity that we're doing. So you might find, you know, that over the course of 10 years, if you're working out, your workouts now might be a little bit different than they were 10 years ago, and you might require a little bit more stretching. You might require a little bit more work in order to recover from a certain run. But overall, that sounds balanced. Most people do, you know, some cardio about 3 days a week, some strength training and plyometrics the other 1 to 2 days a week. But I do think that the more the older that we get and the more you do want to maintain this, the harder we have to work to do that. And so it's worth the investment of scheduling that time in to do things like stretching and recovering from your activities.
We're going to take a little break coming up in just a minute. But I want to get your opinion, Dr. Tanaka, about the 10-minute exercises. There's been some studies that have come out saying that there's almost an equivalency between people who work out very intensely for short periods of time and others who work out less intensely but for longer periods of time. So it's not necessarily the case that you have to, you know, run for an hour or 45 minutes or something. If you do intense exercises for 10 minutes or something, you can get some benefit. What do you know about that?
You know, that is more in the literature of the exercise physiologists, more than, you know, what I do as an orthopedic surgeon. But I have heard a lot about that, and especially the personal trainers will comment on it. I do think there is an element of, you know, even if you're doing a lot of exercise in 10 minutes, it's only 10 minutes, but in order to do high intensity things, you have to work up to that and you have to recover and cool down from that. So I think it ends up being a little bit more than 10 minutes. But my understanding is if you can get in the exercise, it doesn't have to be in a, you know, in one stretch.
But the thing is, any amount of exercise is going to be a good thing.
Yes.
I mean, we have 38% of people in the United States considered obese, yeah, and almost 70% considered overweight. Mm-hmm. So obviously, just on the cardiac side alone,
right,
it's a good idea for people to get out there and get moving,
absolutely,
whether you can only move for a few minutes a day.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to come back in a little bit. If you'd like to continue our conversation with Dr. Miho Tanaka from the Johns Hopkins Women's Sports Medicine Program here on Midday, you can give us a call, 410-662-8777. You can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, or send us a tweet at @MiddayTomHall. Dr. Miho Tanaka is an orthopedic surgeon and the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Hopkins, and we will take more of your questions and comments about health and fitness after a quick break. We're back in a flash. Don't run away.
You're listening to Midday with Tom Hall here on your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall here in Studio A with Dr. Miho Tanaka. Dr. Tanaka was named one of 20 women who are changing the sport of running and the world they threw in the world. This is by Women's Running Magazine. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're changing the world along with changing the sport of running. That's nice of you. She has also worked with the St. Louis Cardinals, the Baltimore Orioles, and a couple of different professional women's basketball teams. She's an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery and the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. We're taking your questions and comments for Dr. Tanaka about knees and shoulders and anything else that you might be prone to injure in whatever sport or exercise you choose to keep yourself fit in. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780. You can drop us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall or send us an email, midday@wipr.org. Let's talk a little bit about knees. And full disclosure, you have treated me for my knees. Your wonderful colleague, Andrew Kosgaria, did a meniscus, torn meniscus, and he operated on that. And when about a year after that operation, I hadn't run anymore. I'd stopped running. And I mentioned this to you, and the other full disclosure is that we know each other because you're a wonderful singer in your part-time and in your spare time, and you sing in the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. So you noticed me limping around rehearsal, and you said, you know, there's stuff you can do for that post-operatively for a torn meniscus. And runners, you know, when I told people I had had a meniscus tear, they, I had that. It's amazing how many people get these things. And you gave me an injection of a thing called Synvisc.
Yes.
And in fact, I am back on the road. I'm now running 3 miles, you know, 2 or 3 times a week. And so I'm grateful to you for that. But knees are a problem with runners.
Yes.
I mean, it just are. You know, I know all sorts of people in their 60s and 70s who started running in their 20s, and they're hobbling around. Are there things you can do to, you know, support your knees to make them last a bit longer than they might otherwise?
Yeah, I think first it's important for people to recognize, before we talk about prevention, that everybody has meniscus tears after a certain age from the wear and tear process. You know, your meniscus is the cushion in between the bones in your knee, and if you walk or if you do things that are impact, then you're starting to wear them down. And so if you were to MRI any person's knee, whether they have knee pain or not, and if they're in their 40s, 50s, 60s, they're going to have some meniscal tearing, a wear and tear process, the same way you wear down the soles of your shoes. So just because you have that doesn't necessarily mean, A, that you have a problem, or B, that you need surgery. So I think that's important to note. In terms of prevention, so we know that meniscus tearing is a wear and tear process, and we know that you wear it down by using the cushion inside your knees. So minimizing the impact that you put on your knees is helpful. You can do that in several ways. One is just sheerly by not putting a lot of volume or distance on your knees. So especially if you're trying to get in shape, you can do that by cross training. So if you're trying to do, you know, you do your long runs on the weekends, but the rest of the time you can swim or you can bike or you can do the elliptical, anything to get your heart rate up and run just for form. So that's one way to kind of save your knees, so to speak. Another way is to minimize the impact that you're putting on your knees. So your muscles actually play a very important role in offloading the shock that you see, the stress that you put on your knees. So I kind of describe it as, you know, the suspension for your car. And so the stronger your muscles are and the more trained they are to dynamically offload the joints, the better and the less stress you're putting on your knees. So I think as you go through life, and especially if you're a long-term runner, it's really, really important to maintain those muscles and to strengthen them.
Yeah, so doing the weight training around the knees.
Exactly, exactly, in addition to just the running. So I think those are important.
Well, we're going to go to the phones again. Michael, you've been very patient from Baltimore waiting to talk to Dr. Miho Tanaka. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm a licensed massage therapist, and I've been in practice for 36 years, and I do a technique called connective tissue therapy along with neuromuscular therapy and sports massage. Those are the three modalities that I draw from. And I called in because of the iliotibial band caller, and wanting some relief there. So I just wanted to, you know, to add to the conversation that the type of work that I do is also very rehabilitative in terms of getting separation between the muscles and tendons and fascia, particularly the IT band. And I'm glad that you gave him those hip stretches, because I find that is where I focus my attention, as well as, doing connective tissue down the iliotibial band. But I have one of the questions that I had for you is that I am interested, because my work is so medically oriented, I literally do medical massage, I have had a challenging time trying to connect with orthopedic surgeons or orthopedic doctors to collaborate. And I thought that it would just be such a great marriage, like, you know, massage therapy and chiropractic is a great marriage. So do you have any suggestions for me in terms of being able to connect with orthopedic doctors or surgeons in the area? I'm also in the Charles Village area.
And when you say connect or collaborate, do you mean sharing patients or do you mean in other ways like research and things like that?
No, sharing patients.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, my office is always accessible and I'm happy to, you know, see patients and send them back to you. I do think that massage therapy is an important component. It is one component of the rehabilitation process for most of my injured patients. and, you know, you could look up my office number as well and I'd be happy to accommodate your patients.
All right. Well, Michael, thank you very much and best of luck as you continue your work. We're going to go now to Baltimore. Breanne is on the line. Breanne, welcome to Midday. Glad you could call.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm 31 and I have some latent lower back disc injuries. So I really just kind of wanted to ask the doctor about, you know, what she thinks about running with some a little bit of tightness and pain in the back from some residual disc injuries and what you can do. I try to keep my hip flexors and my glutes pretty flexible, but sometimes I just find after even like a mile of running, my back really tightens up.
And this is, of course, Breanne, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. This is a complaint you hear from runners a lot. Lower back and knees are the two places that a lot of folks have some challenges.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, it's really an analogous situation to what we were just discussing with the meniscus being the shock absorber in the knee. So your discs are the shock absorbers between the different bones in your vertebrae, and that can see a lot of load as well. And just to kind of go back to the MRI discussion and the wear and tear discussion, what we actually know is that if you were to MRI everybody in their 30s, about 60% of people are going to have some sort of disc problems. And if you MRI people over the age of 65, that number goes up to about 95%. So everybody is going to have some sort of wear and tear in their discs, whether it's really symptomatic, causing, you know, the need for injections or surgery is a little bit of a different story. But I think that a lot of people, when they hear that they have a disc problem or a disc herniation, they get really scared. But that's kind of an expected finding in that age group. So that's kind of my first starting point. Secondly, I think that like the knee, you can strengthen your back muscles and work on what we call your lumbar stabilizing muscles, which are your pelvic muscles, which are your core and your back muscles, which can again help offload the back. And the stronger that those are, the less load you're putting onto the back and the less likely they are to fatigue and get sore. So that's what I would recommend. Most runners will have a good core stabilizing and a running stabilizing program that you can work on. And again, symmetry and hamstring flexibility are important as well.
Let's talk a little bit. I mean, Breanne's perhaps an example, a young woman. You, as I understand it, began the women's sports medicine program at Hopkins.
Yes.
All right. There had been a sports medicine program, but sure. I guess it leaned towards men or men and women could go, but there wasn't something concentrating on the particular challenges that women encounter. What are those? What are the gender differences when it comes to orthopedic issues?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the background and the history of medicine is that it's always it hasn't necessarily focused that much on women. One, because there haven't been as many female athletes, and really the number of women that are participating in sports has really just increased over the past 40 years. So there's not a lot of data on that, and that's what we're trying to increase is our understanding of how we are different. But what we do know is that women are more likely to have certain types of knee problems because they have wider hips, which lead to a different angle at the knee. We know that women are actually 8 to 10 times more likely to tear their ACL, and that the majority
8 to 10 more times likely to tear
an
ACL.
Yes, and that's a huge difference. And the majority of these actually are non-contact injuries. So people hear ACL and they think about, you know, the collision, the football injuries. But about 70 to 80% of these are actually non-contact, where a player plants their foot and turns to cut or pivot, and their knee just buckles and twists under them. And that's exactly the motion that you need to tear your ACL.
And you think of soccer players, field hockey players.
Lacrosse, I mean,
you could do that lacrosse. You could do that in
yep.
tennis. You could do that in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Exactly. And one of the things that we do know about women at that can lead to this problem is their neuromuscular control. So their ability to coordinate the muscles around their knees. And that's actually the one most modifiable risk factor in women that we know of that can reduce that risk. So by addressing those muscles, the strength, the plyometric strengthening, the flexibility and the symmetry, a lot of studies have shown that you can reduce that risk of injury by up to 90%.
All right, we've got full phone lines and a bunch of emails coming in. Here's an email, Dr. Tanaka, from Lisa. She says, I have a question about arthritis in knees. Once you have arthritis in your knee and it is limiting movement and activity, what kinds of things can you do to delay a knee replacement? Of course, sometimes you just can't delay a knee replacement. Sometimes the knee is shot and you just need a new one, right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much right. But again, just because you have bad x-rays, so arthritis was, is referring to what your knee looks like on x-ray and the amount of cartilage and cushion that you've lost in the knee. And just because you have that doesn't necessarily mean that your knees have to hurt. And there are plenty of people that you can x-ray their knees and they have no pain, but they have bad arthritis. And there are people who have mild arthritis on x-rays but have terrible knee pain. And we're really working to try to understand that relationship a little bit better. So could your arthritis or will your arthritis, you know, continue to get worse or at least not get better structurally? Yes, that is true, but you could get more pain relief out of that same knee by doing things like minimizing the stress that you put on your knees, making your muscles stronger so that you can absorb more shock and handle more stress and have a higher threshold for having pain as well.
Julia is on the line from Baltimore. Julia has a question about technique, running technique. Julia, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. My question is, what about running on your toes? Instead of landing on your heel, stay on your toes. Would that lessen knee problems or, help whatsoever?
In general, running on your toes actually puts more stress on your feet. Different runners and different kind of running schools are going to have theories about the best way to run. But in general, we talk about having a foot strike that's not too heavy on the heel, not too heavy on the toes, so that your foot is in a neutral position. The more you have to work to maintain that step and the stride, the more stress you're putting on your feet and on your knees. So for example, if you run on your toes, you have to really rely on your calf muscles and your quad muscles to push off every time your foot is hitting the ground. And that can be stressful for your knees, and as well as hard to maintain over the course of a long distance.
So I have to ask you this question.
Okay.
The intense study that I've done about orthopedic surgery, which is not quite what you've done. You went to medical school and everything. I've studied it and become an expert by watching a movie by Amy Schumer called Trainwreck, in which she dates an orthopedic surgeon. And there's a scene in which he's operating on somebody's knee, and he's got like a hammer and a chisel, and there's blood flying all over the place. Is that what you do for a living?
Yeah.
Is knee surgery that violent?
I hope you didn't just gross out your listeners. So, knee replacement surgery is a little bit like that. And orthopedic surgery is actually called the carpentry of medicine because we work with hammers and tools and plates and screws and power tools and things like that. The surgery that I do, because it's sports medicine, is a lot of it is arthroscopic and minimally invasive. And I do a lot of soft tissue surgery, so ligaments and tendons. And so I'm not always using those big hammers and tools, but it is very similar to what I do.
It's not this little delicate thing,
No.
So you're not saying, give me a suture. You're saying, give me the chain. So,
right.
Huh? Very interesting. All right. Well, I really appreciate your coming by. It's been a very informative hour, and we'll have you back.
Thanks
appreciate
for having
it.
Me.
Dr. Miho Tanaka is a surgeon and an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital, where she directs the Women's Sports Medicine Program. We've got a link to the Women's Sports Medicine Program on our website, wypr.org/midday. That'll do it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation about the thorny ethical issues that we confront as our scientific and technological capabilities improve and expand. Dr. Jeffrey Kahn is the director of the Berman Institute for Bioethics at Johns Hopkins. He'll be my guest tomorrow at noon here on Midday. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Tom, I mean, Gallagher Stern, the least you could do is offer Dr. Tanaka lunch. Well, in fact, we offer lunch for you and every guest here on Midday. Lunch today was provided by the Baltimore Chef Shop. They're on the Avenue in Hamden. They offer a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. Their fall menus feature seasonal ingredients. They've got a crepes class coming up on October 30th. More on the web at BaltimoreChefShop.com. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.